One more factor which is not so spoken about, but I'm very sure will come to the forefront this year, is going to be...
In fact, last year, post September, October last year, the properties which were especially in the range of 1 to 1.5 mil, they saw a jump because of the first home buyer scheme in Sydney itself. Yeah, because the threshold was increased from $900K to $1.5 million.
I was reading at some point of time a few days ago about WA, and that's a huge growth.
Yeah.
And you're talking of close to 20% return annually for the last 5 years. Obviously, some part of it in chunks and some part of it slower, but it's a phenomenal increase.
Especially this year, demand and supply will have impact, but I think borrowing capacity and the rental yields will have more impact.
Welcome to the Property Portfolio Podcast, where property, finance, and investing are broken down into real conversations, which have benefited thousands over the years. The show is hosted by leading industry experts who bring different strategies to the table. Parag Dixit, Chief Strategist of Infinity Financials and Prop Wealth, has more than 20 years in the financial industry and is consistently ranked among Australia's top 10 mortgage brokers. Rudit Khandelwal, Director at Infinity Financials, has 2 decades of experience and over 200 five-star client reviews. He's known for helping clients build strong property portfolios. Julia Starbray, co-founder of Prop Wealth, has spent more than 15 years in real estate domain. He is a lead data researcher and has helped hundreds of people create wealth through property investment. Subscribe to the channel and get regular updates on what's happening in the property market.
The information in this podcast is of a general nature and does not constitute financial or legal advice. It has been prepared without taking into account your personal objectives or financial situation. Individuals must not rely on this information to make financial or investment decisions. You should seek independent professional advice before acting on any investment decisions.
Hi guys, hi Mudit, hi Julius, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Very good, man, very good.
I'm good.
Yes. How are things?
Things are very, very interesting times. The market, in terms of how the property and finance market have changed, it seems that the last year was different. This year seems to be a lot different from how it was last year. So
yeah, lots different, right?
Yeah.
And I can't even imagine how our last year went and how, you know, last year was like weathers, you know, summer and winter and spring, you know, completely different from each other.
Yes.
I think that's how the last year went, and it went pretty quick. Right? So much happened last and we post-COVID, I think one of my fastest years which went by without me noticing was 25 or something. You know, things moved pretty quickly in the last year.
I monitor cycles within cycles. That is a bit different. And then it was a bit strategic.
It was, yeah. And people, there were so many things which have changed. I think if I look at the mood which was there in 25 with all of us, we had a lot of varying changes. But before we go ahead, let me just briefly talk about what we are going to talk today, what we are going to go through. We'll just have general after 25. We'll discuss about what we are going to go state by state. What are the various factors which are going to influence 2026 and how the property market for 2026 looks like? What are the factors which are going to impact it? How those factors are going to impact various states in their stages. And obviously, this one podcast is going to be followed by our State of Investment podcast series, which we'll talk about each state in depth about what's going to happen there, what are the factors, regional and the main cities and all that. But right now, we will have a very general view of what's going to happen in 26. But before we do that, I think what we touched upon at the start, 25, you know, 25 was so interesting. I think the first half of 25 was all exuberance, you know, all young and bursting with energy. You know, there's a lot of rate cuts are going to come in. Right? Everything is going to suddenly fall in place and we are going to be all fine, right?
Yeah. There was a lot of confidence which was there from an investment point of view. Yeah. The mood was good. Everybody was expecting, and it happened as well, right? So that the rates have been high, so the rate cuts are going to impact everybody's financials positively. So the mood was an upswing, and that's how the entire first half of the year was.
Yeah.
But yeah, towards the end, it was a very different story, that how the rate suddenly within a matter of a couple of weeks, the mood from the rate cuts went on to, okay, the rates are not going to get cut, they'll probably remain stable or they can rise, and that started happening. So it was a very, very mixed kind of year that way. Yeah.
Yeah, true. Yes, that's right. So by the mid of the year, we were all
okay, we may not have any more rate cards. We've got three, so not much will happen. But by the end of it, oh my God, we're talking of rate rises, right?
Rate rises, yeah. And I still remember when last year, January, the amount of calls we were receiving because of that positive news, yes, the rates are going to go down pretty high. Then there was a good confidence. And then property prices were also moderate.
And the
way it had happened, and then we had different cycles, it was a bit different.
Absolutely. You know, we had investors looking at creating portfolios. We had first-time buyers who were looking forward to getting to their house. You know, that rate, higher rates were behind them, and you could look forward to, okay, I can move out of my rented place and get into my first home. And government schemes had got preponed because they wanted first-time buyers to not step in and buy some stuff. Maybe I think it was too early, right? Household, the property prices rising, and that contributed a lot to the inflation and brought us to a situation where at the end of the year, we were more talking of rate rises rather than of anything else. And that's been a bit of a thing which happened there. But I think overall, the market grew at a significant rate. That was a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know, because that's what's created this bit now. But it did grow quite a lot.
Yeah, so I could see that till first half of the last year, it was a moderate growth because of the good news. Okay, interest rates are going to go down and all the stuff. But when they have announced the first home buying grant, I could see the increase in the property prices was quite significant.
Yeah, true.
In dollar value, they will be very close to $200,000 to $300,000 in few markets.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was a big impact on the property prices.
That's true. The jump in the property prices, which has happened, some rightly so, some states which are following the 2024 and they are continuing with their strong growth, some states which had bounced back from the depth they were in, like Victoria, WA continued, South Australia continued, NSW besides Sydney continued. But a lot of stuff happened in all of these states, and that made us think through, okay, we are looking at a good thing. But in the end, we finished at a pretty mild rate on what's happened and what was there.
And I think that's where, continuing from there, the outlook for 2026, I think it becomes important to understand that what are the factors which are now going to impact when we are going into 26. We have just started on not a very good note. RBA dampening all the good news here. The rates have, interest rates have already started increasing. So there are multiple things happening now which are going to have a 2026 looks quite different, very different from how 2025 was.
Yeah, definitely. I think inflation will be a big thing, big play which is going to come in. I think everybody now is glued on to the TV at 2:30 on the day where RBI is going to announce, okay, what's going to be happening on the rate cut or the rate rise. I should say that. But also, not only that, I think keenly everyone looks at what's the inflation figure which is going to come in this year. That's going to be a big one. And because of inflation figure, how the interest rate movements are going to happen, that's going to be another pretty big one which is going to be there. I think one more factor which is not so spoken about, but I'm very sure will come to the forefront this year, is going to be land tax. And that's going to be spoken about a lot in this year because that's increasing the cost for investors in particular.
Yes.
And it's something where, because of thresholds now either being lowered or being abolished or being frozen, it's impacting. Every year I hear someone giving me a call and saying, I got a land tax bill of 30 grand. What do I do with that? And then you don't know what to do. So that's going to be a big factor which is going to influence this year as well. And then obviously the big one, the expected changes to the capital gains tax. All right.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a nasty one, but a lot of discussions I'm very sure is going to happen in the next few months about it. Till June, something happens, some bit in the media, some bit actually in the Treasury, some bit in the thing. We'll see how it moves forward and what happens to that one.
Yeah, and then property prices have gained significantly, but not the yields. And all of these factors, rising interest rates, land exchanges, they are impacting more towards the cash flow of the property.
Absolutely. Yeah. They are going to impact the investors a lot. And investors have to be aware of what they are going to do. But let's get a bit deeper into all of these things, right? So what would you, let's say if I look at inflation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Inflation has been rising consistently for the last few months. Month on month, it has been rising. And that's been a quite a bit of not a great news, which everyone wanted to hear. And for last 4 months, 5 months, I think whatever economists have thought that inflation is going to be, it has been more than that.
Yes.
And that's the worrisome part. There's something called as a trimmed mean, which the RBA looks at, and that's also increasing. And what that has brought to us is if we have got a rate rise in February, there's another inflation jump which has happened in the mid-Feb inflation news. So that's impacting, and there are even people talking that March may also get us a rate rise. If March we don't get a rate rise, May is very strong possibility of a rate rise. We don't know by the time we reach May how it's going to pan up, but that's another thing which looks pretty this thing. And I've also heard some more economists talking of one more rate rise in this whole calendar year. So that's going to be three rate rises, and we are back to December 24, where the RBA's rate was 4.35% or something, and that was pretty high. So, and if I look at it in the last 12 months, that's what's happened, right? A lot of bitters.
In the last 12 months, CPI has the consumer price index has gone up by 3.8%, and housing, recreation, these have been the biggest contributor, and housing has increased by 6.8%, which is the bulk of where people who own a mortgage, a lot of their monthly income, part of their monthly income is going there. So that increasing by 6.8%. So housing is putting a very, very significant pressure on the core inflation itself. And house prices, like we said, the last year have in a lot of places have gone up significantly high. So that's a lot of pressure.
Because last year, I think we are going back to what we had last year with the similar interest rate. But the difference between the property prices between last 2025 and 26 is in between 20% to 30%. So according to the yields, those properties are still sustainable. Now, in a case if suppose the interest rates are going back again, what we had in 2025 versus the amount of property prices we are on, it is going to be very tough to manage. Because yields are going to be significantly dropped for the investors. Also because of this high interest rate.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other costs have been increased, like your insurance cost has increased. Property rates are increasing significantly in multiple areas because councils are not able to afford to keep up the places. So in Townsville, I could see their rates are increasing again. So that means all the costs related to the properties are increasing, which will have a severe impact on the property maintenance cost.
Yeah, you're right. All of these costs are increasing on the property. So, and some properties are also increasing in the value in itself, and that's contributing to the inflation. But we should not forget there's a big element of government subsidies, which has also contributed to a jump in the inflation.
Please.
And that government subsidies is the most talked about bit right now. That if there was that government subsidies were managed a bit better, we could have not been in this situation more than housing, but that's the way it is. You know, governments will always work on how it is beneficial to the most people and how it really impacts most people and how it should be. And their job is to do welfare. But I think there's a time which should come where you'll say that okay, the welfare also has to be measured, not reckless, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, what that has brought upon to us is the large interest rate movement which has happened. And like you rightly say, we are looking to maybe go back to the December 24 scenario where we may touch 4.35%.
Yep.
And that means variable rates. And again, see, last time when we had entered into a rate rise scenario, we had a lot of people on fixed rates.
Yes.
And a lot of people were saved from the high interest rate scenario. By that time, they were coming out of the fixed rates. The variable rates had started coming down. The unfortunate guys who had not fixed for 4 years and all those kind of terms, they were kind
caught
of
stuck. Out, yes.
But people who were not, they didn't really feel the impact of the high rates. This time, most of the fixed rates have gone. People had not fixed any rates, and I think we were at historic low in the fixed rates versus variable rate scenario with people, and then now suddenly everyone is exposed.
So suddenly the variable rates have already started going up. The most of the banks have, the day RBI announced, most of the big lenders and all the banks passed on the rate rise to people instantly.
Yeah.
Variable rates have started going up. Fixed rates, interestingly, which I think saw a low in the last 12 months. If I see October, November period, there was a brief period when the fixed rates had gone to a low of slightly below 5%.
Yeah, 4.8
and 7. 4.8, 4.7, yeah. But, and very few people fixed during that period.
Yeah.
It was a very brief window. And within no time, suddenly now the fixed rates have gone up. 1 year fixed rate is close to 6%.
Yeah, yeah.
2 year fixed rate is in the similar range, suddenly. So from early fives or high fours, suddenly up to close to 6%. That's a significant jump within the last 3-4 months itself.
And you're right. See, when you see a 1 year fixed rate and a 2 year fixed rate being similar, it clearly points out to the fact that most of the banks are expecting that we are going to have a flat 2027.
Hmm.
And which means that if you have 2 or 3 rate rises in 26 calendar year, then 27 is going to be there. Like the way we had our 24, I suppose, 2024 was flat, completely flat. We didn't have the rate movements at all. There were no up, no down. And December was, I suppose, the first time, December 24 was the first time where we started talking of rate cuts. But after that, this 27 looks like pretty much similar, that whatever we had, the best case scenario is nothing rises. We just kind of are flat at a higher rate of interest. And that's going to, again, impact the investors a lot in terms of what they do and how they are going to work on this how they're going to get into the investment cycle, or what they are going to do with their existing properties which they are holding, how they're going to play around with it, considering, like you said, costs rising. And one of the biggest costs is land taxes. Yeah, and land tax is going to be a big one this year. Land tax is going to be an important one this year, because if you see, like NSW, they've frozen their land tax threshold, and this year will be higher land tax for the same property if you're holding. It doesn't matter even if you bought a new one or not. The same property is going to give you a higher land tax bill. So is Victoria. So is Tassie. So is ACT. So
yep.
All these states where it is like this, we are going to have a higher land tax bill to investors. Similarly in Queensland, similarly in Western Australia, where property prices have suddenly jumped up. People would not have seen these kind of land tax coming into them, but property prices have jumped, which is nice to see when you're wanting to see your valuation, but it's not nice to see when you see that, oh, my property land has gone up and I'm going to use a bill.
It has a lot of impact on the land value. So in WA previously, there was no land tax because the land value is so low.
Yeah.
Now the property market have jumped significantly, and there are a lot of investors who owns more than 5-6 properties. So in that case, yes, most of the investors are getting the land tax bills. Now similarly,
absolutely,
Melbourne is on 50,000 threshold, Tasmania, you have land tax from day one.
Yeah.
So yes, land tax is the biggest component. With all of this interest rate rise, all the other inflation related parameters, your council rates are rising, plus the land tax, it's going to be tough.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because the moment land tax goes up, your cost of holding the property goes up. And if your cost of holding goes up, then you are under pressure to increase the rents as well.
Right.
So most people who want to hold the property for longer, they will try and increase the rent. And again, that increases the inflation, right? So it has a direct impact on a lot of people who are renting the property.
Correct. And I think when we talk about states, we definitely must be covering it. But if you look at how rents are faring, they are contributing 30-40% of persons' income are going towards rent. It's already that high. So if land tax is going to impact and going to take the rent up further, which it's likely going to be because investors cannot absorb the cost beyond a point, it's going to start impacting.
Yeah.
And then people will have to, as an investor, I would have to either choose the state where I invest wisely, or I will have to see how do I really hold on to that property and how do I really make sense of the investment which I have done. But that's going to be a tough and a critical one. But I think land tax is a hidden part today.
Because suddenly everybody, when they're buying an investment property, you start projecting your financials for next few years. And these are factors that you wouldn't have built into how your financials will look like. Suddenly a 30K bill or a 40K or 50K bill can do a huge difference to how you're looking at your financials. So the cash flow gets impacted massively.
Absolutely right. And they've been traditional structures which people have used used to buy, you know, husband, wife would have done different structures to buy, different shares in holding to buy. All that has gone for a different calculation, because now you find that you are having a land tax bill which is coming through. It's going to be a tough one. And I think the worst news, if it comes through for investors in this year, would be if the upcoming changes to the capital gains tax happens. Yeah. That's going to be a big, big, big impact. That's a big news which is going to come in, because the impact on an investor is going to be massive in this year. And I'm just going by the grapevine which is coming through in the media. So we're talking of bringing the discount down to 33% from 50% today. And it's not just a 17% drop. It's a substantial increase on the tax if you make money on a particular property. And it's going to really, really impact you. See, and I've seen people who've been making kind of calculations on what to do and how do I do that. But more importantly, when I'm talking to investors who are looking at and hearing this news, one thing which they are more and more certain of is that, okay, I maybe will hold the property longer.
Yeah,
because I will maybe increase the rent and I'll hold it because I will be able to afford to hold it. But what it will do is it will bring the inventory down further. And if that happens, it's going to be back to square one.
Which is already a problem. In a lot of places, inventory is already very low, which is putting the pressure on the supply-demand gap.
Yeah.
And that has been a reason why property prices have gone up in a lot of places.
Correct.
So investors, they're holding longer. That puts a lot more pressure in those areas.
Yeah. At this stage, we are sitting at lowest in multiple states. And then if you look at the forecasting engine as well, the forecast is still 2035 to 2036. Most of the states will not have or going to create, divide more land, which is going to be in a mainstream. So the land is not coming up. Construction cost has been risen. There's not availability of enough trades. Plus, if we're getting a more land tax, more capital gains kind of tax, and then people are going to hold the properties, it is resulting in an inventory dropping. Then plus there's more pressure on the rentals, because yes, there's a good amount of immigration. A lot of people coming into country. They need houses, not enough houses for the rental. So it is like all the impacts are coming together, and it's like the big impact on the property market in the positive side.
Absolutely right. So speaking of the calculation of land, of capital gains tax, I was reading somewhere that if you just on a 100K profit, if you made a 100K profit on particular property, if you as an investor, you've sold that one, and if you are going to get whatever net of all your cost, 100K is the cost. And even if you were at a 30% tax bracket, your expected capital gains tax on just the 100K profit will increase by about $4,000. And if you're looking at about in a 37% tax bracket, if someone's there, we are looking at a cost increase of about $6,500. And that grows up. If it's on a 45%, which is your highest tax bracket, if you're sitting there, then you're looking at about $7,000-$7,500 of tax increase per $100,000. And that's massive.
Yep.
That's not small. That's a lot of money which comes through. And if you that means if you've done well, and if you invested well, and if you understood well, you've read well, and you've got $500,000 of profit, and God forbid if you are at a 50% tax bracket kind of a scenario, obviously you're earning well, that's good for you. But then you're talking of good $40,000 of which is a lot of tax to pay. And that's going to be a massive impact on people when they are going to do that. So that's going to be a big one if it comes through about to people, about what will happen to them once if the capital gains tax bit comes through to us to work on.
Yeah.
So I think absolutely right. I think these factors, inflation, interest rate, capital gains tax, land tax, all these are the large, broad policy and economic indicators which are going to impact broadly. I think the other thing we should talk about is that how each state or the capital cities, how the market looks like, how it was, and how does it look like in the coming year. These factors, how they are going to impact locally the markets, because different states are in different positions when it comes to supply-demand the ratio, and how the pipeline of supply is, how the demand has been going up, the difference between houses, units, and how they have grown in the last year versus what looks in the coming few months.
Absolutely right. No, I think the impact on state-wise is a good way of taking it and trying to understand on a macro, on a larger, on a broader level of what it's going to be. But maybe I would suggest that we do it. We do the main capital cities separately, and to at least the Sydney and Brisbane, which are the leaders, and then we'll try and discuss the other states one by one. But let's say Sydney. So we are all sitting here. So I think the last year houses grew pretty well, about
6 to 7% versus units around 2 to 2.5%.
Yeah.
So Sydney is historically very low on supply. The biggest issue in Sydney is when you look at the affordability sections.
Yeah.
Buying and renting affordability always have an issue. So for the buying, most of the owner-occupiers or investors are paying around 40 to 45% of the income because property prices are so high. And then renting affordability is very close to around 35 to 36%. So I was looking in a market and I was studying a few markets towards the Western Sydney as well as towards the Parramatta region. What I could see is basically rentals are rising. There is enough pressure on rentals because there are limited vacancies. But the properties which are up to 1.5 million have a good demand because there is a good affordability between those ranges. But the property prices between 1.5 to 2 million are moving slowly. And then about 2 million is out of the affordability. That means renting in Sydney is much cheaper than buying a property in Sydney.
Yeah, that's a good factor to put in. I think rent-wise, I contribute about 35% of my salary or my income towards the rent, whereas if I'm purchasing a property, Sydney says I'm contributing about 45% of my income towards the mortgage repayments. Well, that's a big thing. Rent is easier, and that's why rental returns, but property prices are so high, rental returns on units are pretty low, and that's I think contributing to the fact that more than 2 million kind of property segments is a bit frozen right now. It's not moving anywhere. It's a bit stagnant there. It's tough for people to afford to buy, everyone to be afford to buy there. So 1.5 mil, I think that's bread and butter here. That's like everyone wants to be there and not above that. And that's going to be there.
Yeah, in fact, last year, post September, October last year, the properties which were especially in the range of 1 to 1.5 mil, they saw a jump because of the first home buyer scheme in Sydney itself. Yeah, because the threshold was increased from $900K to $1.5 million.
Yeah.
So the movement was there. But going forward, like we're saying this year, it's given the affordability, Sydney's house prices, property prices, and for more and more, especially like investors, investing in Sydney has become very difficult now. A lot of investors, that's why, are looking at outside Sydney because the rental yields becomes a huge challenge here. And that's what most likely in 2026, if the interest rate pressures continues, which is likely so, it's going to be a tough market for
investors. I agree on that. So when we look at the below 1.5 million market, I was looking at data points and the suburbs like St. Mary's, St. Clair's, towards that belt, from last 3 years, property prices were rising silently and they've grown by 40%. So whatever is below 1.5 million had a good jump. Even though the rentals was around 4%, and now they have dropped to around 3.8%. But in that segment, up from 900,000 till 1.4 million, we still had a strong rental demand. But now, what we could see is these prices are touching 1.5 million because that price gap have a lot of demand. And that had created more pressure.
True. And that pressure is coming to the front right now. And I think 2026 is a year where Sydney, not that it will be crashing, it will be frozen. It just will be frozen on time. You know, the sellers, they would not want to reduce their expectation. They'll be there where they want to be. Buyers cannot stretch any further because interest rates are high and I can't borrow more. It's going to be a bit flattish
market.
In terms of purchasing of properties, pretty flattish kind of a market this year. You know, there's a ceiling there. People just can't go beyond it. And even if you can, you can't stop living. You need to eat. You need to enjoy. You need to have some bites as well. I think rate cuts, Sydney would be the most impacted by that. If rate cuts start coming in, that will give a meaningful upside to Sydney. But before rate cuts come in, it's going to be tough, and especially the upper part of it, 3-4 million and plus kind of a segment, that will have a lot of movement. Not normal movement. Maybe I have a much more abnormal movement in the price range.
But rental will have a good outlook because a lot of people, those who couldn't buy or they would like to buy, can't buy because of the interest rates or the affordability or the borrowing capacity shortages.
Yeah.
And then there'll be more rental demand.
Yeah.
So at this stage, vacancies are low. Not a lot of properties are coming into market.
Yeah.
Because builders not afford to build, or the property prices are so expensive they're not able to sell.
Yeah.
So very low vacancies for the properties. And because of that rental demand, we could see there'll be a significant amount of the rental rises in Sydney.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. In fact, units are giving more positive increases in Sydney, and more units are coming into the market. I think build to rent is also going to be a good factor in Sydney when the way it comes through, because build to rent will still give a good 4-4.5% rental yields to the conglomerates which are going to manufacture that, and that's going to be an important one.
So I think that's right. And if I were to look at the two separate segments, one is houses and one is units. Houses are becoming more and more unaffordable.
Yeah.
Units are relatively affordable. But the problem is, in Sydney, we have not seen the unit prices grow up.
Yeah.
Go up, right? So the units have not gone up. And a lot of people do not want to buy units because of that reason. So houses unaffordable, units not going up in value. And that is why I think a lot of people in Sydney, especially who are into, let's say, first-time buyers, for them it has become like, okay, this is not good, this is not something I can afford, then should I continue on rent vesting? And that's the model probably in Sydney that will become more and more popular.
Yeah, yeah. What do you do? You know, houses are unaffordable, units are not rising. Renting is tight, and it's pretty tight, and the people still can't get the rental properties where they want. So it's a bit of a tricky situation in Sydney.
Correct. And there'll be another reason for rent units to not to grow because of the supply issue. So a lot of projects which were stalled during COVID, most of that supply will come into the mainstream. So in next 2 to 3 years, there'll be inventory increment of around 3 to 4 months that will go up to around 9 to 10 months of inventory in Sydney.
On the unit
market.
Yeah.
So in unit front, we are getting more inventory. That's why supply of units are pretty high. That's why it is not giving that pressure. It is not creating enough demand to property prices to go up, even though you still have a rental demand. So unit market will be a little slow in Sydney.
That's right. Whereas I think recent NSW is different. Recent NSW has been a bit different from there.
Yes.
Houses have risen faster than even Sydney has, because obviously they have a different price point. They deal in about, I think, 840 is the median price. And they are better. Units have also fared better. Yeah, the regional and I think rest of NSW, including Gold Coast and including South Coast and including Newcastle and beyond and
NSW
and all that. Yeah, so not Gold Coast, Central Coast. Yeah. So all of this bit, all of these whole thing has performed in a much different way, much, much better. Units have performed better. Things along the coast have done pretty nice. Coastal LGAs are doing really, really well in Sydney, in the other part of NSW.
Yeah, that's right. So when we look at the regional NSW's perspective, every council in regional NSW performed at least 15-20% in few segment, not in every segment. It depends on the segmentation of the pricing also. So for an example, if you go towards Dubbo is rising too fast because of multiple economical projects. They have few $1 billion projects.
Yeah.
Albury, amazing. It grew. Now Albury surrounding has a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Regional were growing because of the two reasons. Number one is basically extremely low supply. Yields were very close to 5%, 5 to 5.5%.
Yeah.
And there is enough net internal migration from your main cities towards the regional town center. Like when you look at the Central Coast. Central Coast has a statistical area for S2 councils, the Wyong and Gosford.
Yeah.
Towards the Tuga Lake, we could see the property prices have moved in between from last 2 years in dollar value around $150,000 to $200,000. We were looking at the properties in Hamlin Terrace towards Warunga, basically. So over there, the property prices have jumped significantly. In that market, basically, there is a lot of owner-occupied demand also. Plus, Central Coast is easily commutable to Sydney because you have a good train network. Other than that, when you look at the other regional significant urban areas like Wagga Wagga or Tamworth region, we could see a significant amount of property price movement because of the fact that lower supply, higher demand, low inventory, good yields, good economic outlook.
Absolutely. And all of these areas, and NSW, I think, has been one of the best in terms of vacancy rates. The
yes.
Vacancy rates have traditionally been lower in the last year, and they've always been good. It's a tight rental demand situation which is out there, and which is what has made it, it made it better for investors, and that's why investors have wanted to invest there. And but obviously, it is now reaching a point where we it's becoming a bit tighter for expensive for the
local economy.
Local economies to be there. But I think that's if the income doesn't follow, they'll have a cap in this year. But 2026, I think 2026, you know, the other part of NSW is more of like, you know, it's the escape from Sydney, this the high cost Sydney and the bustling Sydney.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
kind of escape from there. It's still working out. It's still working for people. But I think the gap is narrowing down. The discount which people were having on the prices is narrowing down. It quite marries what's happening in the Sydney area and the similarly South Coast, and quite marries that. Some parts are even more expensive than Sydney. And I think the purchase outlook is going to be similar. I think it is going to be a good 4 to 6% and price increase, which will still happen in 26 in besides Sydney kind of a scenario in NSW, right?
Yeah. The places which are committable to Sydney still follow $1.5 million mark.
Yeah.
And that's the pressure they're going to witness because of the owner-occupier demand as well, because a lot of people are moving out of Sydney and moving to that side.
Yeah.
When we go towards Hunter or towards the Albury Council or towards the Albury surrounding or Dubbo, property prices are still well below 650K. And then yields are still around 4.5% to 5%. So there's still a bit margin to go up. So affordability will be the driving factor in those regions.
Absolutely right. And that's what's causing the momentum coming in those regions. That's what's causing the momentum along the coast as well. So there's an undersupply, which is going to keep on keeping having the purchase demand moving across in all these areas. And that's going to keep on driving the purchase in the 2000, in the whole
year. Yeah, I think that way is 2026. Rest of NSW seems more promising in terms of growth and given the supply constraints and affordability still in a lot of areas, but of course it depends on the pocket. It is not a bed rule that you can apply for the remaining NSW, but there'll be pockets which are expected to do decently well in this coming year.
Correct. And even rental demands are going to be pretty tight this year, you know. Houses will still continue to be 4% plus. You know, units will still have 4.5% plus or something, which is going to be there. So it's going to be still, obviously, at these kind of rates, it may be still be a bit cash flow negative, but it's still one of the best rentals you can get in NSW. And NSW, by nature of it, commands people with better incomes and better income ranges. So it's affordable for people. And that's why the rest of NSW is going to be a strong focus market in the year 26, where I think investor demand and owner-occupied demand going to be equally balanced and will still impact people to make it as a choice area where they would want to live in and where they would
even outgoings are less in NSW. So you don't have more council rates, you don't have more insurance is moderate. Plus, when you look at the unit market in NSW, it has a different perspective, because when you go towards a little regional, towards the rest of the NSW, there is a significant difference between the housing prices and the unit market. So when you look at the segmentation in the pricing between the housing and the units, if it is more than 50 to 60%, then you could witness that pressure, and NSW still command that. That's why unit will have a lot of pressure this year.
Absolutely right. And that's it's good for the other rest of NSW, which is, I think, I'm pretty confident that that's going to be a big focus for investors in this coming year. But again, another big focus for investors, I think, will be Perth and WA. And we're going to the other coast, right? Completely other coast. That's going to be a huge one. I think 25 was massive for Perth and WA in particular. But Perth, obviously, that's the largest one. So huge, 15% plus in the houses, 17% plus with the units in terms of the price growth, which is phenomenal.
I think in the last 5 years, WA market has grown by almost 90% in terms of property values. And today, Perth is the average house price, median house price is touching almost $1 million there now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that is for a decade there was no movement, and suddenly last 4 years have seen huge growth. So last year has been a continuation of that growth which we have been seeing in Perth.
Absolutely right. I think 90% growth in the last 5 years. That's what the statistics I was reading at some point of time a few days ago about WA. And that's a huge growth.
Yeah.
And you're talking of close to 20% return annually for the last 5 years. Obviously, some part of it in chunks and some part of it slower. But it's a phenomenal increase. I think the best market overall in the last 5 years. And it's been very good. 2025 has been one of the best years for WA as well. And even in renting as well, right?
Yeah.
Rental affordability has been phenomenal. Rental growth has been phenomenal. Regional WA rents have grown by more than 10%. Unit yields still hold strong at more than 5%, which is the best for one of the capital cities, right?
Yeah,
5% in Perth is a huge rental.
I think the balance of capital growth and cash flow, the rental yield.
Yeah.
Perth has been one of the best markets so far, and 25 would continue to do so.
Yeah, yeah. And it also, despite all this, the rental supply is pretty low.
Very low.
So it's a very constrained market. You still have those pictures of 40 people standing in the queue to get a place to rent, but still get a good, decent place to rent. That's why I think 1% odd is the vacancy rate there, and which is so low in Perth. And this is so phenomenal.
Yields are still around 4.8 to 5.2% at this price guide. First half of 2025, bit okay. Second half of 2025, when the investor realized that, yes, that's the only market where you could get a very good capital growth, because even though the percentage growth was a bit okay, but still the dollar value was around $600,000. You could afford properties in suburb like Thornley, for an example, which is 15 kilometers to city with 800 square meter lot for $600,000. And the rental was around 5.5%. And that's the time when there are a lot of investors come back to the Perth again. And when we could see a significant amount of pressure on the property prices, even though historically, the Perth was running low on inventory, extremely low supply, very high demand. Then after the first home buying scheme, all the suburbs which are owner-occupiers, preferred suburb, like when you go towards the Swan Council or towards the inner CBD, like suburb like Wellard or Bertram or Canningvale, Pierre Water, Harrisdale, till mid last year, they were sitting at very close to 750 to 800-ish, like Harrisdale and Pierre Waters. They're cruising around 1.1 million now. And when you look at the rentals, they're crossing around $1,000 a week.
Yeah.
So extremely low supply, high demand, and then extremely high owner-occupied demand have made a lot of impact on the property prices in WA. Yeah. And it is still continuing.
The more said about Perth, the lesser it is. But I think still, despite what we say, Perth still is, I think, where Sydney was in 2015. That's where the prices sit. So I don't know if it marries and reaches where Sydney is today, what's going to happen to the Perth market, but that's where it is. That's a large gap from Sydney, what it is. And the demand and the undersupply is a massive story for Perth. And we still are going to see that undersupply is going to continue in 2026. If you're looking at purchasing a property, it's a strong capital gain market for 26 as well. With I think across the state, demand going to be pretty much equal, pretty much responsive to how it is going to be there. Rate cuts, the more the rate cuts, the better that economy is going to become, and the better that value of properties and holding the properties is going to become. And there was a SQM research which we were reading. Obviously, now we have rate hikes coming, but they said that if rate hikes would not have come in 26, it could have grown by 8 to 12%. And the rate hikes come, obviously, is the scenario now. We are still looking at a 3 to 5% increase in the property prices in this year, despite whatever expensive it becomes in terms of holding costs. That's a strong statement for a state which is continuing for the last 2-3 years.
Yeah, because incomes are much better in Perth. Mm-hmm. So we could see, when we look at affordability in buying and renting, Perth still sitting at, you know, less than 30 years of affordability, and then rental affordability is below around 25-26%.
Yeah.
Plus the growth in rentals are extremely higher. So that means, because of the pressure on the property market due to the low vacancies, rentals are rising. For investors, that's the only market that still offers you more than 4.5% yield.
Yeah, and I think 26 is going to continue with
yes.
a good yield. So I think close to 5%. Units are going extremely well there as well. And more than 5% rental yield comes from there, which makes, if you're looking at an apartment, if you're getting an apartment or a townhouse or something, which makes you to be in a situation where you are still pretty close to positive, despite the rate rises. So you're not going to be too far off. Mm-hmm. With an expected rental growth of about 6 to 8% in this year, you're looking at a strong market, which is going to be there.
Yeah, because the difference between the pricing for houses and units is still more than 50-60%.
Yeah.
And units are offering good rental returns. Plus, Perth is very much undersupply in units as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the main reason why unit market is so much in demand.
100%. I think say is going to be the star of 2026 once again. Yeah. Regional WA is going to be strong. It's going to be a star this year. Huge supply and demand gap will continue along with a huge rental income growth in WA. And that's what's going to maybe attract the investors a lot in the state this year for how it's going to work out for them, right?
Yeah.
WA is, I think it's going to be a darling for most of the investors for
this
year, which continues from there.
Yeah.
And I think if we come back towards the eastern coast, yeah. I think Brisbane has been similar in performance for this year, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think the story has been for Brisbane has been quite different. Perth, it has been the supply demand and so stuff. Brisbane, the Olympic story still continues, right?
Yeah,
and
continues strong.
It comes as a surprise that how long will it continue? Yeah. But the state has gone up by 14% growth in houses itself and roughly. And units have grown at a faster pace, close to 17%. So that has been a phenomenal growth, capital growth, given it has been rising since last 5 years, 6 years continuously now.
Yes.
Post-COVID, the kind of growth Brisbane has seen, it has been phenomenal.
Yeah, and when we look at that kind of growth in Brisbane, that is also in a $1 million market.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is also in $1 million market. Two main reasons, the Olympic story. Second thing is even Brisbane doesn't have more supply and there's a lot of investors' demand. WA has more owner-occupier demand. So if you look at the owner-to-ratios in the entire WA is basically still above 70%. In Brisbane, the renters are very close to 48% in few councils. So Brisbane was more preferred by an investors, where a lot of investors from the eastern state or western state are investing in Brisbane with the story of the Olympic. Similarly, that Brisbane is very close to Gold Coast. So there is a lot of demand which has been created in Gold Coast as well as the Sunshine Coast, and that impacts a lot onto the Brisbane prices also. So when we have seen the price have risen in Brisbane in multiple councils, like we were studying a council towards the Logan or Ipswich or the Moreton Bay, yes, they have very good infrastructure demand, but property prices have grown up significantly because they were in a range of in between 700 to 800, reached up to 1.1 million. But with that, there is a penalty of higher portion of the investors as well. Also, what I could see is basically the incomes in that areas are not extremely higher. So that is going towards little dangerous territory.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is going little towards the dangerous territory.
Yeah.
So when you look at the entire 2026 scenario for the Brisbane, what I could see is those councils which are very, very low on affordability and in socioeconomy, like the surrounding of Ipswich or Logan or towards the extreme north of Moreton Bay, over there, the buying affordability will be sitting very close to 55 years in few cases. Renting affordability is extremely higher and investors' proportion is very high, plus the socioeconomic ranking is significantly decreased, and that is going to be impactful on a longer time. But there are a lot of suburb jumping happening. So if I want to invest in Brisbane at this stage, then probably the best place to getting in towards the inner CBD, where the property prices are still manageable.
Yeah, it is. See, though you're right, in 25, Brisbane did cross the median price of $1 million. It's become expensive there. But still, there is a lot of demand which is there, which is going to continue in 26. I think rent-wise as well, in 25, it was pretty, vacancy rates, I think they were the historic low, less than 1%.
Yeah.
I don't really remember which state has had such a low rental vacancy. And it's practically zero rental vacancy out there, it's I think one of the best of all the capital cities we have in Australia, some of the phenomenal rents, house rents at 6% plus, unit rents, I think they were rental yields more than 4-6% plus, strong yields in the units and strong yields in houses there as well. And you're right, Brisbane, I think, is going to be the market where this is going to continue to be strong. But the way houses have moved, the way houses is there, it's I think no longer a value city. It's become more of a growing city with an affordable risk of or affordability risk, which is going to come through. But still, that's also a typical market, one of the most unique markets where unit prices are growing faster than house prices.
Yeah.
And that's driving the demand. I think Olympics is impacting, is a skewness towards unit where you do not want to have an asset with you which is going to impact you. You don't want to mow the lawn. You don't want to do all that stuff. So units are, and quality units are being built there. I don't think that Brisbane has seen the issue Sydney has seen in terms of quality of apartments being made. So the demand for apartments is very, very strong. And the inventory, there's a huge deficit in the inventory supply, which is coming in there, which is taking the property prices up and making it still go stronger in the Brisbane city in itself, right? Rentals are a bit different. So rentals are units, again, though they are outperform the houses in Brisbane. And it's again, because of the Olympic demand, that the rents are still being stronger, still massive requirement of properties which are coming in Brisbane, and people are wanting to be there, and which is why I think in the 2026, the whole year, we will find that one of the most important things will be units will continue to march over up our houses and will continue to have demands and still have great rental yields, which will be there in the market for Brisbane for the year 26 in particular. Now how people are going to take it up.
Yeah. So unit prices are still going because they are not making a lot of units. That is number one.
Yeah.
So always there is a short supply.
Yeah.
Second thing is the quality of units. Yeah. Plus, towards the Brisbane CBD, there is enough demand from the for the units as well. Also, unit and houses has still, there is a big gap which has to be filled. So good rental demand, not more supply towards the units. And there's a good demand within the investors as well as the owner occupiers also preferring to units now. So that's the main reason why the units are growing in Sydney, and it will continue to grow in 2026.
In Brisbane, yeah. Correct.
Yeah. Well, I was saying, and if we move beyond Brisbane, if we move to the entire region, the rest of Queensland, the growth has been good there as well. I mean, the property prices across unit and houses have gone up by more than 12% in the last year, which is, if you look at five-year growth, it has been close to 80% growth, which is very similar, not very far off from how Brisbane grew. So the impact has been across multiple places, not only just localized to Brisbane. So it's a growing market. The rest of Queensland has grown up.
It is. It has had a substantial increase. I think Gold Coast and Sunshine Coast does skew the data of rest of Queensland, but still a good 12% increase in the houses, a good 13% increase in the units value has been strong. It's a strong market. You know, it's been stretched, and Gold Coast or non-Gold Coast, every market has been seeing a phenomenal growth of a 15 to 20% in every year, annualized per year for the last 4-5 years, which is strong, which is pretty strong, right?
Yeah, the places like Townsville, Rockhampton, most of the suburb in Townsville, the worst suburbs touching around 700 now.
Yeah.
The good suburbs are touching $1 million. Then look at Rockhampton. If you go towards the Gresmere, or which is outer side of the Rockhampton, still touching $700,000. The good suburb in Rockhampton touching $900,000. We had seen a significant amount of growth in Bundaberg. Then we had seen a good growth in Mackay, Gladstone. So that's because of the fact that over there, there's still the inventory loss. There is no inventory, but the yield was much better. And suddenly, when in Townsville, there was a lot of good economical indicators, like they were building a port, then they have a big defense infrastructure. There are a lot of housing requirements for the defense personnel, but they don't have more houses. And then cost of construction in Brisbane, surrounding of regional Queensland is extremely expensive. Land is a bit cheaper. To build the houses, they spend at least very close to $2,800 to $3,500 per square meter. And then the duration to build the houses is more than 2 years. And that has created havoc, actually, because like they don't have more supply towards the property, but they have more demand,
yeah.
more population growth, good yields, and that's factored in a good capital growth across 2025.
Yeah, I think tourism and obviously the economy and the people who are staying there, all that has been a great combination for the Gold Coast market, and it is having a ripple effect on the other part of Queensland as well. And that's why the rental yields are strong, pretty strong in terms of rental yields. And vacancies, I think, everywhere they are pretty tight, very tight, and it's not there. And I think regional Queensland, I think if I were to classify it, regional Queensland is where I think Brisbane was about 3 or 4 years ago. And the strong growth, livable yields, people, the renters are also fine with it, the investors are also fine with it, but I think it's also catching up a bit. It's similar to what we spoke about as regional or the other part of NSW besides yeah. Sydney. Even in the other part of Queensland, we are seeing the same thing. It's like kind of catching up to Brisbane. Just being 3 years away is not too far. You have a Perth 10 years away from Sydney,
yeah.
but you have the other part of Queensland 3 or 4 years away from Brisbane, which is pretty close by, right? But still, I think one of the best outlooks we have for this year in terms of 26, the purchase price, if you're looking at purchasing a property, it's going to be a good 8-10% kind of a rental, kind of a property price increase, which we can look at in Gold Coast, which is strong, with a pretty strong outlook in there. And the rest of that, besides Gold Coast and Brisbane, obviously, we will still have about 6-8% growth, which will come from there. The Olympics is really, really driving the demand.
Yeah.
It's really pushing better. There is a good corridors of growth which are being created across Queensland in various places, and which is taking the momentum for purchases to in its own state, and it's making people move, and it's going to continue to give a strong focus in this year for why people would love to maybe search for good pockets of other parts of Queensland for value and for the growth which is going to come there. Rental demands are going to be strong. I think the rental yields are still 4.5-5% in a lot of areas, which is strong. And if you are looking at a good rental growth which is going to come in the year 26 as well, that's in all, using the property price growth and the rental growth, is going to be a good package in itself for investors who want to come in. If we are able to identify the right pockets of growth, it's not going to be as universal as WA, where every kind of area will increase, but Queensland will have a lot more pockets where growth will be there too.
It will be more strategic. So for an example, if I focus towards the Townsville as the entire a significant urban area, then there are suburbs within the Townsville which are going to do better, where there is more occupied demand, where the housing quality is better, where the socioeconomy is better, because affordability is already there, rental demand is already there, plus there is enough owner-occupied demand, plus they have got a good population growth. The similar story is going to be repeated for the Rockhampton region. The Cairns has gone up significantly. Bundaberg, all the suburbs where you could see a good owner-occupied demand, plus good socioeconomy, plus good buying affordability with the good incomes, that's the places where we could see a significant amount of impact, because what we have seen is the places which are outskirts of the main CBD yeah. areas or the suburbs which are low in socioeconomy, where the property prices have gone up significantly, a lot of people are selling those properties and moving towards the preferred owner-occupied suburbs.
Yeah, true.
So in that section also, we could see there is a lot of suburb jumping happening.
Absolutely. No, that's true. That's true. We've spoken about all the other major towns. I think it's time we should also talk about Adelaide and South Australian market. I think they have, it has been strong in itself as well, right?
Yeah.
Adelaide has done well. I think it's just woken up. You know, I think the best turnaround story for the year 25 has been for Adelaide, you know,
yeah.
just woken up from a 15-year-old slumber or something.
Yeah,
it still had houses growing by about 9-ish%, apartments growing by about 9-9.5%. Median house prices are just a shade away from $1 million, I suppose.
Yes,
unit prices are about 650k plus there. So strong market, you know, it's a pretty strong market with a phenomenal purchase clearance rate. Affordabilities are kind of going away, you know.
Yeah.
You can still find houses, but there are older ones. Adelaide still has older property issue, but the affordability is they're still an advantage than a lot of packet, but it's going away. I think 25 had taken it away to a bit. Vacancies are good. Vacancy rates are good in Adelaide. I think people are, the rental growth is fine. The houses still have about 3-4% kind of a rental yield.
Yeah.
Apartments have a good rental yield as well, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. So at this stage, Adelaide is more of strategic investment. Yeah. So in Adelaide, when we, Adelaide can either grow in north or south, because one side you have hills, another side you have ocean.
Yeah.
So south is already expensive. They have touched more than $1 million in few places, but in north you still have a demand.
Yeah.
But in Adelaide, the biggest issue is the quality of houses.
Yeah.
Houses are pretty old, but it come up with very good land sizes. And then since they have a lot of older houses, there is such a good demand for the new houses because owner occupiers are still interested to buy new houses. So in Adelaide, the investment will be more strategic. So if you're going to hold the land and then if you're going to do the subdivision projects, or if you can hold the land and then sell it to the developers later, or you can build the houses and sell, if you have that kind of strategies, then that's the best place to invest. Or for the normal investor, the yields are still below 4%.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think till 25, Adelaide, as I was saying, has been the biggest re-rating story of Australia. One of the biggest ones, at least in my memory, which is there. And again, it's going to be important whether it sustains itself or it just fizzles out or maybe kind of goes stagnant again. But it's been a good story. What do you think? You know, the purchase outlook, how does it look like for Adelaide in this year, you know, 26?
You're absolutely right. Because the kind of growth which Adelaide has seen, it's been close to 80% growth in the last 5 years, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
The turnaround has been quite, again, similar to Perth, right? It didn't grow for a very long time. And suddenly in three, four years itself, prices of houses, properties have almost kind of doubled. So the problem is that once you have such a steep growth in a short period of time, suddenly the affordability becomes a question mark. And that's what Adelaide is kind of seeing now. So it doesn't look like that it will be the most promising market in the year going forward. But yeah, it will be.
See, there's a stock on market problem with Adelaide. Because the stock of on market is so low, I think the momentum is still going to take it there, but it may start losing steam. Like you rightly said, maybe a later part of 26, it will start losing steam because it's kind of run the property price course, and it will still be good. I think there's a good late market surge which has been there.
But also because for an investor, let's say, so I, as an investor, you're also looking at the rentals, right? So rentals are also now under pressure there. They're not the rental yields, which were 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Adelaide was giving much better rental yields. Suddenly that has come down because of increase in the property prices. So as an investor, again, it's a different market, not the way it has been. It will be a different market this year.
That's true. And then this year, it will be a bit different. It's strategic, like as I said before. There is affordability crisis, but there is a supply shortage also. Yeah. So supply inventory is still below 3 months, and then it's shrinking. So if I can see, there is a lot of demand from developers or flippers or those who are getting into the subdivision kind of potential. So if you're that kind of investor, there is huge demand in Adelaide. But if you're a normal mom and an investor where you need a good rental income with a good tenant quality, because now most of the properties which are affordable towards the Playford Council, where the socioeconomy is also a bit dicey. So it's not kind of a normal situation.
Not for every investor.
Not for every investor, but this is for where pro-investors would like to do the subdivision project, can book good profit.
Yeah. Interesting. But again, see, one more thing which we have to understand. Rental demand is softening in Adelaide.
Hmm.
It's not growing to that level. So there will be early stage subdivision players and flipping players who may benefit, but you need to be really sure of the market. I think by the time 2026 will come to an end, we will see kind of a different phase of Adelaide, but it's still running a bit stronger in terms of, I think, property prices will still remain stronger, but rentals will be a bit, there will be a bit of a softening in rentals which will come in, right?
Yeah, yields are dropping significantly because property prices have jumped. In last 1 year, I could see there is more than 20% growth. So last year, I could buy a properties in Elizabeth for around probably late 5 to early 6. Now, those similar properties are going at very close to mid 7s. But the rentals have not been into that pace. So basically, the delta between your rent price and then the rentals is extremely higher. And then if the yields are dropping significantly, then it's very tough for investor to manage. Yes. Yeah. So definitely, the property prices will remain strong for this year. But if rentals are not rising, unless the interest rate will go down, it will be a difficult market.
Yeah, true. But I think the most interesting city or the state to look at in this year will be Melbourne, right?
That's elephant in the room, right?
That's true. I think the 24, year 25 for Melbourne was good. It still had houses growing, right? 5%, 6% rate in houses. Yeah. Apartments have been a sad story, houses have been good. Melbourne is everyone wants it to grow, but for some reason, the state doesn't grow.
Julius, you've spoken a lot about the supply thing in Melbourne. How was 25 in terms of supply, and what did you see here?
25, so there was a bit of campaign for Melbourne where I could see there was a bit of interest from investors, and then towards the western and northern part of the Melbourne, they have a lot of supply. It's not like the supply coming up in Sydney or the states where you have 100 lots and 10,000 people are in the queue. In Melbourne, it's otherwise. Like, you have 10,000 lots leasing, and then you just have to select what you want and you'll get it. So that kind of supply was releasing. In between, there are a lot of investors who are jumping into the market because property prices are lower, and then yields and then inventory was okay. And suddenly, by August of 2025, you could see the inventory was a bit okay. And from August 2025 onwards, I could see the inventory have jumped significantly. So that has impacted on the vacancies as well, because there is more supply in the market, because there was a little bit of momentum in the market where a lot of people were started selling. Investors were getting into market. And then suddenly it has impacted on the property vacancies. So Melbourne is historically always higher on vacancies. So the vacancies were very close to 1.82% in certain areas, jumped to 4%.
Yeah, true. So, you picked up the right point at the start. What we said was so true. See, you have, when you talk of a WA or you talk of a Queensland or you talk of NSWA large parts, or South Australia we are talking of in large parts, you always talk of the geography being an issue, and that's why the land supply is less or houses are less, and there's a supply constraint and a structural issue. Melbourne doesn't have that. It has land for acres and acres, and it's getting constructed and constructed, which is what has led to, I think, the land values in the last 5 years have not gone beyond 15, not grown by 15% or more or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is the lowest, which is so low, which is
absolutely right. I think so. It's not a problem that there's no demand. A lot of migration has happened into Melbourne, like, let's say, Sydney or Perth. A lot of migration has happened into Melbourne. The problem is that the supply has been overshooting the demand, and that is the pressure or downward pressure on property prices. So people who are looking to buy to live, good news for them that they can buy for cheaper, which is not possible in a lot of other capital cities. But then as an investor,
As an owner-occupier as well, the capital value has not grown. So your capital appreciation has not been great. And this is why I think the supply being on the other side, the supply problem being on the other side, that you have a larger supply, much longer, much more in supply, there is rental vacancy, which is also higher than other states. When we talk of rental vacancies in some state being practically zero, like Queensland or Brisbane, and we talk of vacancies of 2% plus in Melbourne, that's a very different end of it. And units have been the worst hit there in Victoria. In Melbourne, especially in the CBD, the prices have really, really taken a hit. And we've heard some horror stories about that in 25. But I think still, apartments are keeping to get built. Build to rent is going big, strong in Melbourne, despite all what is happening in terms of prices and contrary to what everybody thinks. But I think that's the way Melbourne has been in 25. But 26, I think is Melbourne, though it has been one of the important cities where buyers gained some ground in 25. It's going to be more of a contrarian buy this year, right? Against the flow, people are going to make a case saying that, okay, we've had an Adelaide which slept for 15 years. We had a Perth which slept for 15 years. So Melbourne has been sleeping for last 5 years. It's time. Maybe I should invest, and there is hope where it should do. But a lot of other factors to come in. But still, I think the biggest contrarian case exists in the Melbourne market, where you can bet against the tide and say, maybe you win. You know, that's where the market sits. There,
it's all on hope. It's a lot of things on hope, but yeah. Still. All the other markets are growing faster, and they are sitting at the place where a lot of investors couldn't afford. In general, there are still places where you can still buy properties under 550. And that could be the reason the investors might focus, okay, yes, the vacancies are higher. My yields are much worse, but still, yes, I could afford a property in Melbourne. And that could be one of the reasons then a lot of people will start looking for a Melbourne. Yep. Other than that, supply is still higher, and then I don't think so. When we look at the demand and supply fundamentals, if the area has a limited supply, you control a demand, and then property prices can go up. In Melbourne, you can't control supply.
Yeah.
And the amount of demand you can create or investigate, if the supply is so strong that it can still come up, then it will be a moderate growth. It won't be like it's going to surge like WA. Or
then most likely it will be a slow growth over a period of time. Then it's not that like other markets, sudden growth kind of thing.
Because Melbourne always grow in a pocket. Yeah. So last year also when we see Melbourne, it didn't grow everywhere. So like there are good pockets in Melbourne which grew by around 15-20% as well. And the few pockets which declined. So it's going to be a similar story.
Yeah, but it's a... One of the markets which I think will be highly, highly dependent on rate cuts. And it's
Correct.
Going to be leveraged to rate cuts a bit. And most speculative, in fact, it's going to be there. Rental demands are still okay. It's not bad. It's never been the best in rental yields. And it's not going to be the best in rental yields. It's going to be moderate. And it's going to grow moderate there as well. But I think it will still have... I think Melbourne is being and is in the minds, it's in a projection that, you know, there's no alternatives. Maybe the other alternatives are too expensive. Might as well buy in a capital city rather than buy in regional. So let me buy in Melbourne. So that may be the one which drives the demand there. But otherwise, otherwise the Melbourne market is pretty much slow right now.
Yeah, it is slow, and it is going to remain so for some time, probably in 2026. It might catch up momentum by next year. This year, probably in pockets, we could see a little bit of growth. Other than that, Melbourne market will be a little sluggish.
Yeah. We should also talk about the two smaller markets.
Yeah,
Hobart and you know, Darwin. But let's start from Hobart. What do you think on Hobart? When do you think that's going to grow? Or maybe what's happened in 25 there?
Hobart, amongst other markets, it's a very small market. And yeah. So, although, of course, when we compare markets, we talk about percentage growth. Hobart grew moderately, 6-7%. Not a bad growth, not a phenomenal growth. But the challenge with Hobart market has been that it's so small that suddenly one small areas can have a direct large impact there.
Yeah. So it still has, I think, a good median prices. The house prices are still strong.
Yeah.
To whatever be the small it is, but it still grew by, I think the houses grew by a good 6-6.5% in the last year, 25. And that's decent growth. Apartments, similar, right? Pretty similar in apartments and houses. Very, very similar kind of a growth. And it's been okay. It still has about 7-ish%, 6.9, 7-ish% growth in rentals. Units apartment had also come. I mean, so it's good. It's still nice. But though it's I think in 22 was where they reached their peak in prices, where, you know, the COVID, post-COVID migration had been the strongest. That was, I think, the best years of Hobart.
Correct.
It dropped pretty much from there. It's still not caught up. It's still a bit behind. But I think it's increasing. Its selective markets are getting a bit better. Selective markets are going horrible there.
It's cyclic. Hobart is a little cyclic. So yes, it grew in a few places, but Hobart has two different classes. So like there's a area in Hobart which is extremely good, where you could see good economy, good socioeconomy, good people, good occupation. And then when you cross a certain suburb in Hobart, then the socioeconomy is very poor, tenant quality is bad, and then you still have a lot of renter proportion. Plus, that's the only place where the population growth is not at the pace.
Yeah.
So at this stage, there is good investors' demand, and because of that, it's growing, because vacancies are around less than 1%, yields are much stronger, very close to 4.5 to 5% in places. But it could be cyclic. It's like it will gain some momentum and after that it might go slow.
It's a small market, It's a small market. And I think it's gone from being that COVID darling kind of a state and kind of a location. Yeah. Hobart and losses in two of the biggest ones. You know, they've been the choice at that point of time. They're still solid. You know, they're still affordable. Don't take me wrong, but they're not momentum players. They kind of go up and down in a lot. It's a smaller market. It's more of in a purchase outlook. If I look at 26, it's more of in a consolidation phase rather than a growth phase. It's kind of gathering itself after the drop, which was an anomaly in the whole state. And I think it's going to be in income, people's income, like you rightly said, there is a varying income between the areas, and that's going to be the main driver. So unless the incomes rise, there is going to be a bit of a dampener in the price rise, which is going to happen there.
Yeah, it's investor sensitive market. So basically, till they are good returns, it will go up, but we can't expect like there will be a big owner-occupier wave after that, and then property prices are going to jump around 20-30% again, like for the states. Even though in that similar price guide, you still have a better option across the other state or other places in the country. So when Hobart is sitting at in between 7 to 750,000, in that segment, you still have a better option in NSW, you still have a better option in Queensland, you still have a better option in regional Victoria. So it would be one of the choice. Like I have 10 properties and I want one more in Tasmania, that's why I'll go there.
Yeah, for
a reason, but it won't be say I have to buy there for the capital growth.
Yeah, it's not going to be the first choice, and it's going to still have its waves of ups and downs. Absolutely. It's a small market driven predominantly by investors, and it's going to be driven like that, and I think that's how it is going to be. It is. But on the other side, I think just going north, straight north, Darwin. I think Darwin was a surprise in 25, right?
Yes,
big surprise. 20% growth across apartments or houses. Phenomenal. I don't know where it came from, right?
Yeah, it's because yields were much better. Till last year, when the market started going up, the property prices were in early 400s versus, and then yields were around 78%.
Yeah.
And at that pace, and the supply is always lower, so it has got a lot of investors' attention. And by then, a lot of investors have started buying the properties over there.
Yeah.
So whatever we had seen in that market, it's because of the investors hit, not because of the owner-occupier, because vacancies are also rising.
Yeah. Yeah.
If there is enough consumption of properties by owner-occupiers, then yes, vacancies would have been tight.
Yeah.
Now investors are buying more properties and putting those properties in the market for the rental. Vacancies are a little bit higher, and that is, and also the rental proportion is getting upper and upper and upper, and that's not a great sign. So it has caught a good attention, but it's going into the bit dangerous territory.
I know, but you know, the biggest attraction for any investor, what it can be, that's the only state which is a true cash flow positive.
Yes.
Even in the net rents, it's cash flow positive after taking out all the expenses, not even in the gross one. And that's a strong statement, which is why you're finding that the yields of houses are, I think even today, it'll be close to 6%. Apartments are more than 6%, 7%, 8% in rental yields. True positive cash flow states. And that's what I think it's there. Thin market, pretty thin market, like you rightly said. But and that's what's causing, by the end of 25, it started becoming a bit stronger. It's still the positively geared answer to Sydney's title, you know, negative market.
Itself. I mean, and marry it with the kind of growth, capital growth it has seen. I think that's why 2025 has been. And I'm not too sure if too many people predicted that. It was a bit of a surprise because of the rental yields. I think given the high interest rates and the borrowing capacity being tight there, and people have been looking at options where they can manage the property, sustain it for longer. Suddenly, there was a bit of rush in Darwin last year. Yeah?
It is. It's like we said, it's a thin market. It's a risky market. I think 26 outlook, if I would look at it, people will still try and find value when they find that, okay, I'm stuck everywhere. Where do I invest? And I want something cash flow positive. And you don't research it well, then you can just follow the herd and follow the media and reach there. But it's a investment segment driven market. It's purely investment driven market. You know, gains can just go away like that. And then it can follow the Hobart of post-pandemic era, where it suddenly drops out. Because though it is going to still have rentals which are going to be cash flow positive, positive, but it's a small base, and it looks very nice in percentage, but in absolute amount it can be a pretty risky game this year, right? Yeah,
for me it's very thin market where still there is a demand, but it is reached into the median prices where you still have availability of these properties in such stronger market.
Yeah.
So if it's not sitting at $400,000 versus you are an 8% yield now.
Yeah.
Those who had been there on that, probably they might exit and invest into the better market because they have gained. Those who are entering now, they always face the investor's exit risk.
Yeah.
So that could go either anywhere. Yeah.
No, absolutely right. I think that the challenge with such markets is always like if there's no net high increase in demand, the intrinsic demand, which is people either migrating there or the demand for owner-occupier property. Mm. If it is, that is not there. You're always at a risk of investor flight. It can happen overnight. And that's the risk which such a market will always pose.
Darwin, for sure. Because especially because of the volumes, when the volumes are not so much and when you are so dependent on one class, and investor class is a fleeting class, and we've seen that investors travel in the waves. You know, the wave goes to WA, to South Australia, to Queensland, to this, and it's reached Darwin, and suddenly it can just fly away.
Mm.
Once it flies away, you don't have an intrinsic owner-occupied demand to hold you at that point of time. That's going to be dangerous there.
Yeah. So the person who's the last person who's holding the property, that's where it gets stuck then. And then that's the risk you carry.
Exit from that market is very important.
True. Whenever you make a strategy, and if in 26 anyone makes a strategy of investing there, they should very well know on day zero how they're going to exit out of it. And when are they going to exit out of it? It's going to be it's not a bad market, but it's going to be a tough one. So the brave one will win. But yeah, how many can be the brave ones is what time will tell about there. But I think one of the we've discussed about various locations and states and about them, but the big question with the inflation and the rate rises and the rental yields is going to be the biggest one is going to be the borrowing capacity and the impacts of borrowing capacity on all of these states. Because when we are looking at, when you're saying, okay, WA is going to be the darling and regional Queensland is going to be the darling and NSW is going to be the darling, and the other ones besides the Hobarts and Darwins and maybe even Melbourne, the other ones are going to be moderate and growing there. What do I do? There is going to be a huge impact of interest rate, and rental yields are going to start going down. Though they are stronger, but if the rates go up, my actual rental yields are going to go down. That will be a big impact, right? That will be a big impact.
So absolutely right. Interest rates, direct impact. One is that your repayments are higher. Second is your borrowing capacity is lower. And that's what we will see if the interest rate goes up again. And this is what we saw a few years ago when the rates were rising, right? And although we were talking about Darwin just now, that Darwin is an investor's, and if you don't have intrinsic demand, but places like Darwin benefit in such scenarios because when I, as an investor, I am impacted by the borrowing capacity where I have limited funds available, plus my cash flow is negative and I want to sustain a property. First question is, if I buy a property today and the inflation is high and my repayments are high, can I sustain the property for longer?
Absolutely right.
If I can't sustain, then I can't buy. So markets like this where the rental yields are on the higher side, either positive or positive, if not positive, but close to zero, neutrally geared or slightly negative, it becomes an easy choice. And places like Sydney, it becomes very, very difficult, especially in these kind of climates.
Very tough. Sydney, Melbourne. Hobart, maybe even Adelaide to an extent, will kind of have a painful 26 if the borrowing capacities get impacted. And obviously the three stars, which we just stated, they will definitely benefit out of it. They will sustain through. But you're right. So if I were an investor and if I'm seeing that I'm getting squeezed from all the ends, Darwin, that is. So that's where I'm going.
Yeah. At the same time, we'll see that, and we have been seeing that whenever the interest rates go up, then because the borrowing capacity is getting tighter, then the big banks, the big lenders, they become tighter. So people start going to smaller lenders, which are specialists, which are more lenient on borrowing capacity, but then the interest rates are a bit higher. So that squeezes further. And that's why the need or the want of a positively geared property increases more. So rental yields start driving the market more than the capital growth.
Yes, that's right. Because especially this year, demand and supply will have impact, But I think borrowing capacity and the rental yields will have more impact.
Borrowing capacity is definitely, even to not only to investors, but to first home buyers as well.
Yes.
It will have an impact. And I think whenever, like we saw 2 years ago, or maybe 1.5 years ago, people will start flocking to non-bank lenders as well for a higher borrowing capacity, for getting more, which further increases their cost of loan because the rates are typically higher. But there will be, that release from borrowing capacity, which can come in for some period of time, but that's going to be a constrained activity for this year for most of the people, whether it's investor or first home buyers in the year 26, right?
Yeah, that's right. And then that scheme has a limitation as well.
Yeah.
Because most of the states are also passing, right, for NSW, or sorry, Sydney is 1.5 million, Perth, I believe it's 1 million.
Yeah.
And then property prices are crossing beyond that price, right?
That's weird. That's why I think within the first home buyer segments, there is still that uptick in the property prices and a stronger demand.
Mm.
But beyond those levels, and that's the one of the most debatable thing which is happening in all the, in the media, you know, by giving more and more first home buyer schemes, you have an instant price growth which happens in that segment, but that really...
Does that really benefit?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Yeah, it more of penalizes you rather than giving you a benefit of growth which is coming in that area. But yeah, a lot of stuff which is different from 25, which is happening in borrowing capacity when we're talking of that. I think 2025 was sustained by a unlikely hero of trust lending, you know, trust in company lending, yeah, which is not there anymore in 26. I think that hero is going away. That savior is going away. Trust lending, people like... whether I should say utilized or misutilized, but a lot of that was there, and that's closed. It's got tightened across all the segments, and that's slowing down of lending in the trust and the company segments is going to be there. It's now only for sophisticated lenders, but earlier I think 8 out of 10 investors were talking of buying under a trust. Buy under a trust, and I want to preserve my borrowing capacity. I think that word of preserve my borrowing capacity was like,
I don't know, I think it was like we've discussed this a lot of times, that it was not a question of whether it will happen or not, it was always a question of when will it happen. And yeah, 25 end, it happened.
Yeah.
Most banks have pulled out of it. Most banks have constrained it now. Banks are saying, we will not even give a loan if you're looking at this structure. So that is gone, definitely. And when we look at numbers, and because we talk to people on a daily basis about their financials, so I think this was a much needed thing purely from a long-term affordability of somebody who's investing into this.
Oh, there was structural issues which are coming in there. I could see where people will come to me and say, Parag, I want to take a loan and I've got 2 trusts already, 3 trusts already. I want to create more trust and this. And I would say, mate, how are you going to make the repayment? But they just want to buy. And everyone was with this opinion in that rates are going to go down. So it's going to become anyways affordable. So let me gather as many properties as I can. You know,
yeah,
you can just gather as much as you can. You can maybe you buy the whole town or something. But that's what was the objective which people were going with. Good that it's close. And I think that darling of investors is gone in 26. And that's going to be an impact. I think that's going to be a slowing down impact on what's going to happen.
Yeah, and it became otherwise. 2025, interest rates were going down. Even the property prices were little lower, yields were around 5%. So the cost to the trust was not much higher from your out of pocket. Now the property prices have gone significantly, interest rates is going up, yields are dropping, and the amount of money which you have to put it to the trust is much higher. So if you have 5 trusts, and if every trust is around $2,000 to $3,000 negative, that means the amount of pressure on the investor is significantly higher.
Yeah.
So this is going to be impact a lot.
This will impact a lot. Yeah, true. You're true. It will impact a lot.
I think one is this is gone. But on the opposite, I think there is SMSF lending, which is high chances, and it is likely to pick up because the moment borrowing capacity gets tighter, your capacity to buy a property under your name in your name goes down. But in SMSF, because it has no impact on your personal borrowing, that option is still available. So I think SMSF lending is, and we've been seeing it. It has been last few years, it has gone up significantly. And this year, high chances it will continue to go up.
Yeah, that's true. You picked up the right thing. I think we had seen this impact in 24.
Mm.
And obviously it carried on to 25. It was kind of moderating down, but with the rates going up, I think it's going to re-come up. It's going to surge again, where people will want to invest through their SMSF. People will want to set up an SMSF. And I think there will be a good uptick on the loans, which were when people would want to set up an SMSF to do property investment. Obviously, they will take their advice and they would do what is right for them. But I think that kind of a property investment tool is going to be there. Again, it's going to be important on how people invest, because rental yields are going to be different from 2024-25 to what's going to be there in 2026, and state-wise it's going to change. Maybe on this side you will find an NSW or and Queensland will really, really benefit, you know. And this is where I think the Hobart, the Tassie state can also play a role, because the rental yields being there.
Definitely. Because SMSF, the interest rates are a little higher. People, in order to balance the cash flow, they look at typically higher rental yields. So Tassie can benefit. But at the same time, a market like Adelaide, where we're talking about the quality of property not being so great, it may not be so beneficial, because especially in SMSF, people want to keep the property for a longer period. The longer, at least, benefit of capital gains and also different markets, it has a different impact.
Absolutely right. You know, SMSF as a tool anyways has to be used very judiciously, and you need to obviously know what you're doing. But quality properties there will be a lot of attraction towards SMSF purchases from here. But I think it's going to be a interesting year, 2026, where we've spoken about so many states. I think it's going to be phenomenal.
So if you were to just kind of summarize the whole thing, that how this year has been and what we're looking forward in this year, then places like, we're talking about regional NSW, the regional Queensland, these are areas which will probably do a little better than a lot of other places. And places like, whether it's Brisbane or Adelaide, these will be medium focus states where the growth can be more moderate. But other places like Tassie, Hobart, Sydney, they're expected not to be great shakes in this coming year.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think you're right. See, if I would look at what's happening, and if we look at and we hear back what we were speaking for all this while, you're right. These three will be the darlings, right? It's going to be a clear darlings. WA, the rest of NSW, the regional Queensland markets are going to be phenomenally interesting in this year. I think investor demand is going to really be focused on that one. Though I think you're right about Brisbane being a moderate rise, because the price is going to be a bit constraining factor there. Otherwise, it should have still moved up, maybe, because that's why the regional part of Queensland, other part of Queensland is going to be a bit better. Even Gold Coast is going to be good. But South Australia, maybe a bit slower. Victoria will be a bit more slower than that. But I think Sydney, I think you really need to be courageous to invest in Sydney at the rental yields, which are touching 2 and below 2 in a lot of places. You need to be really, really into investing, and that's why you will buy in Sydney. Tassie is some products like an SMSF, it may still go through, but yeah, Tassie is going to be a tough one this year. Darwin, you know, unpredictable. It's just unpredictable. But I really think people are really going to take cognizance of the fact that it's going to be a risky market, and you need to be really sure about how you could enter into Darwin, and how will you exit out of Darwin. Exit is going to be important, right?
Yeah, it is going to be more strategic investment this year. Like, we can't just go anywhere and have a capital growth. Instead, need more research. Why are you going to get that market? How are you going to sustain with the cash flow? How much would be the rental yields? Need to study a lot before you start investing. Because, it's very easy to get into the property market. But sometimes if it is stalled for a longer time, it's very hard to exit. Or if you're entering into the market where if that investment is not sustainable, then there's high chances that you exit from there.
Yeah.
So it is going to be such a research-driven investment for this year. It's not like a last 2 to 3 years where wherever you invested, it's just gone up, because everything is in your favor.
Yeah, market
everything
is
in your favor.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You know, it will not be a market where you can just invest like that. You just will not be able to invest without a strategy. If you don't have a plan, you will not be able to invest. If you don't know what you're doing, if you don't know your goals, if you don't know your objectives, it's not a market in 26 where you would want to get invested. Like they say, it's complicated. This year is
every market will have a different strategy. If you want to get into Sydney,
TGS. Western Australia, yes, it will be a good market. NSW will be a good market. Brisbane, yes, you need to match up with the certain criteria. Melbourne, probably you need to wait for some time to growth to come in. So it really depends on the strategy, and every market will have a different strategies.
And yeah, just adding on to it, one is, of course, we are talking about these inflation and tax, land tax and capital gains tax. So I think what is, apart from supply demand, it's important to build into your numbers that how these numbers will play in your particular circumstance. So if the interest rates go up, and which is what likely it is, like we were saying, so then how your numbers get impacted, how your cash flow gets impacted, and will you be able to sustain any kind of investment that you're looking for? If the rentals go up, then how will you sustain? So I think these factors will play an important role. Doing that analysis becomes very, very critical in this year. And that's where the need to take professional help will be even further important this year, whether it is the financial advisors, mortgage brokers, buyer agents, who can help you understand the sensitivity towards these various parameters, the analysis towards how your numbers will look like, how your maths will look like, because it's not going to be just on an Excel. It's going to impact your lifestyle on a daily basis, right? So that understanding of those numbers, that research, professional help if needed, all of these will become more important this year.
That's true. That's going to be very important this year. The planning is going to be very important this year. What you're going to do, where you're going to do, because you have so many variables which come through this year.
Yeah.
There is a capital growth which you have to take care of. There is a rental yield which you have to take care of. There's going to be, you know, taxes, the government taxes, government regulations, the rules which are changing, the policies which are changing. So many external factors, you know, what's happening in US, what's happening in European markets, what's happening in Asian markets. All that is going to come into play. There's a lot going on in this time. So you will need professional advice. This year will be year where you would need to have your financial plan on your side. You will need to have your accountant on your side.
Yeah.
You'll need to have a mortgage broker on your side. You will need to have a good buyer agent on your side if you're really looking at investing this year. It's not an year for everyone. It's going to be an year for a planned and strategic guy to be there. I always also think, you know, this year, you know, buyer agents may start taking a bit more advisory role rather than a transactory role, which was there. So a lot of people had come into the industry, and there were a lot of who were more just transaction. I think that bit of it will more mature this year. It's going to be a maturer industry, right?
Yeah, it is going to be more mature, more strategic, more research oriented, and more about advisory. It's just not about the transactions.
Absolutely right. And people will need that as well, because you it's not natural for everyone to be able to play between all of these areas and still able to research where can I invest and still able to find out, okay, that's a better area for me to invest and I can go there and I can do that. So that bit of an advice is going to be critical. And if anyone's looking at investment, that's going to be important for them, right? And this is going to be a critical piece for them.
Absolutely. And I think that's where the knowledge which you can gain from various sources and the advice is critical. And I think we have our podcast, which we're going to talk about state-wise analysis. I think those will become, I'm excited towards those, because that there we will dissect each state, we will dissect each region by region and try to see the dynamics which are going to impact every state.
Yep, that's the state of investment series, which we are going to come in with, which we're going to dissect and deep dive into every state, and not only in the every state, states and various pockets in various areas of those states, and how they are going to really perform in the year 26, and what's the key factor which is going to drive which area. And it will be interesting, right? I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it will be. It will be so much of data oriented, plus data heavy and more research based.
Yeah, data heavy. That's what you like, right? Data heavy. Yeah. It is going to be, right? And it's very interesting. So to see just one part of a state doing well and the other part of the state not doing well because of what's happening there. Maybe we'll even talk about infrastructure stuff, which suddenly has come up even on the coastal side in NSW, and a lot of things which are happening in various states. That's going to be an interesting one.
New trainline announcement.
New trainline announcement, right? Yeah. There are new trainline announcements. Yeah. Lots. Yeah, that's true. No, thank you very much, guys. I think it's been a phenomenal session which we had together. That's really great to hear from you guys, right? I think it will be good fun when we start talking about the states.
Yes.
Thanks a lot. It was lovely talking, and I didn't realize what the time was. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Lovely chatting up with you. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you enjoyed being part of our community today, please take a moment to rate and review the show on your favorite platform.
We don't want conversation to end here. You're all active and ready to jump.
You can connect with each one of us directly via the links below. Thanks for watching. Keep listening. We have a lot of podcasts. Share your thoughts.